Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today, a conversation with Randall Balmer. You know, our next guest first came to my attention when his Mine Eyes Have Seen His Glory hit PBS, and he was described to me by somebody as a, quote, lapsed evangelical, or something like that. Well, I figured he can't be all bad if that's the case. So I started watching what he was about, and he is Randall Balmer, by the way, professor of religion at Barnard College at Columbia University. And he tells about his own journey in growing pains, a new book that's subtitled Learning to Love My Father's Faith. It's published by Brazos Press. Nice to have you with us today, Randall.
Thanks, Dib. Great to be with you.
Let's start by learning a bit about your father's faith. And you talk about fundamentalism, you talk about, and of course, one of the things that most mere mortals struggle with is whatever distinction there is between fundamentalism and evangelicalism these days. But
right.
But talk about the faith in which you were raised.
Well, the shorthand description of the difference between the two is that a fundamentalist is an evangelical who's mad about something. It's more mad of temperament than it is really theology. And I was reared in a household where my father was an evangelical minister. I sometimes call him fundamentalist because I think he was in his theology. Although in terms of temperament, he was not a kind of bombastic, militant type of person. He was much more ironic, much more even-tempered than that, I think. So that was my background.
Talk about fundamentalism as a set of beliefs.
Well, fundamentalism, the name comes from a series of pamphlets that were published between 1910 and 1915 in the midst of the so-called fundamentalist-modernist controversy among American Protestants when the conservatives felt that there was a decided shift in the direction of liberalism or modernism within northern Protestant denominations, and they sought to stanch that movement toward liberalism. They published the Fundamentals, which set out the very conservative orthodox evangelical theology, the virgin birth of Jesus, the authenticity of miracles, the inerrancy of the Bible, the fact that Jesus would come again at any moment, and so forth.
Now, accompanying that set of beliefs in the fundamentalism in which you were raised was a lifestyle. And that was actually more pronounced for many kids. A lot of kids raised in the type of background that you and I as well were raised in didn't know a lot about the doctrine, but we knew a lot about the lifestyle expectations.
We sure did. We knew what we couldn't do is what in modern.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think, and that comes out of a kind of posture within the evangelical subculture, as I call it, that was quite defensive. It viewed the larger world as both corrupt and corrupting. And our parents made their best efforts to keep us away from that corruption. And so we weren't allowed to go to movies or even or dancing or even square dancing in gym class.
I'll tell you a funny story, Randall, while we're on that. A friend of mine raised in fundamentalism literally as a mocking thing, when he was taken to square dancing, he looked at his partner and said, "What? Know ye not that my body is the temple of the Holy Spirit?" as he faced off his partner. Anybody raised in fundamentalism gets that story immediately.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the drinking, smoking, card playing, all sorts of things that we weren't allowed to do. All that was considered worldly, and that was one of the things we tried to avoid was worldliness in any of its forms.
Now, were you rebellious against that as a kid?
Not terribly. I was a good boy.
You were the oldest, right?
I was the oldest, yeah. It comes with being the oldest in part, I think. I pretty much stayed fairly close to the rules and the strictures growing up, and even made it through much of adolescence. And my brothers rebelled a little bit more than I did, but mine came a little bit later, I think.
And we'll get to this later, but strangely, when you look back and reflect on that, you in later life, you can come to understand and appreciate what some of what was being attempted there. However, at the time,
right,
it didn't make any sense.
That's right. At the time, it seemed stifling and stultifying and kind of claustrophobic. But I, you know, as a parent now of teenagers myself, I do understand the impulse to try to protect your children as much as possible. And I have to say that I think not all of that protection or all that instinct is entirely bad, because adolescence can be a troubled time, especially these days. And if I was protected from drugs and alcohol abuse by growing up within that world, that's a good thing. Although I have to say that I'm not sure that I would have been terribly tempted by that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, on top of all of this, being a preacher's kid meant, as you say in your book, that there was an expectation that you'd carry on the family business. Talk about how that comes across to you as a kid.
Well, there was, as long as I can remember, there was an expectation that I would follow my father's footsteps, and I think that's what he certainly intended for me. And I have to add hastily that I'm not the only person who grows up with these sorts of expectations. It's not just preacher's kids, but the sons and sometimes the daughters of successful business people are expected to kind of fall in line and take up the family business. So I'm well aware that my situation was not unique by any stretch of the imagination. But as I kind of look back on my childhood, I see that almost everything was calibrated or calculated so that I would eventually move on to seminary and then seek ordination and take on the, as you say, assume the mantle of leadership within the family for the Lord.
You know, interestingly, I interviewed Oliver Sacks, the neurologist, and he was raised in a scientific family. He wrote a book, Uncle Tungsten, and he described, as you said, the same kind of expectation in his family. His parents were both doctors. Everybody in the family, there were seven of his nine uncles were scientists, and that was just the expectation. However, the difference is when you're raised in a pastor's home, it has to do not only with your occupation, but it has to do with your belief system. It has to do with your spiritual life.
Yes.
And there's not this ability for many young people to differentiate between their own spiritual journey and this overwhelming sense of responsibility to enter into a profession that assumes that you've got some maturity in that journey.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, even that dimension of it was part of my experience, where I was certainly encouraged, as were many other kids, but certainly encouraged to read my Bible and have devotions and so forth. And, you know, that's a pretty tough thing to pull off with an adolescent.
Now, you had a little pulpit, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Christmas after my fifth birthday, my Christmas present was a 3-foot-tall wooden pulpit that was a replica of my father's pulpit.
And, wow.
So that was...
There's some pressure.
There's some pressure, and actually I was just visiting my mother this past week in Des Moines, and it's still there in the basement. They've carried it around all these years.
It's moved with the family, folks.
Join us for our next podcast with Randall Ballmer. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse.